Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello, thank you for downloading. Welcome to episode 124 of We Are Going Up. I had to check then. This is Mark Crossley. It's that time of year when as fans we all start to dream. Can we go up? Can we sneak into those playoffs? Can we survive? So much to talk about at this point in the season. So as you can imagine, the studio is bulging full of people ready to talk about it. Except there's no one here. Where is everyone? DC? He's usually here. Carl? Adam? Anyone? It's just me. Hang on. I'm going to make a call. We need to make a call here. I can't do this whole show on my own. Here we go. It's ringing.
Hello?
Jim Knight. Hello.
Hello, mate.
How are you doing? Congratulations.
Right,
congratulations. Leicester City promoted to the Premier League. And that is why you're in Leicester, I believe.
Yeah, it doesn't feel real, does it?
So you're going to the game against Brighton, which is on Tuesday night as we record this week. Here's some stats for you. It's only taken 3,612 days, 454 league games, 625 league goals, 9 managers, 178 players and 43 red cards. By the way, I did all those stats myself. And Leicester City are back in the Premier League.
Oh, God, that's a depressing list of statistics, isn't it? You've got too much time on your hands, mate.
Trust me, I nicked that off Twitter. So how did you follow it on Saturday, then?
The thing is, I was at a family wedding on Saturday in the middle of the countryside in Shrewsbury in a castle with literally no phone signal whatsoever. So it was a case of going to the highest point of the venue as we can, or the top of the car park, to try and get a few updates. It was the most shambolic effort I've ever seen. Of trying to follow, and eventually it came through and I was just checking the scores on my phone because I knew that we needed Derby and QPR both
but
to lose their
the main thing is it's done now and it's achieved and we're going to talk about it. Leicester, the first team this season in the Football League to get promoted. We're going to have a special guest on the line to join us in a second, and later, Jim, check this out, DC isn't here, he's in Newcastle.
Of course he is.
Don't ask. Anyway, we'll speak to DC later to look back on all the week's action. We'll talk Massimo Cellino, Stuart Pearce, the FA Cup semi-finals coming up this weekend, and DC playing up front with Lufa Blissett last week at the New Den. We're also going to be reflecting on another stunning away win for Steve Evans and Rotherham United in League One. The Millers came back from 3-2 down to win 4-3 at Gillingham on Saturday, inspired by that Tom Hitchcock hat-trick. And that result not only gives them a playoff spot for definite, but also a real chance of a second success automatic promotion. We'll find out more on their amazing season so far from Jonathan Buchan, who is a freelance sports broadcaster who covers Rotherham for BBC Radio Sheffield. So all that to come then, but let's begin with the first side to be promoted in the Football League this season, because Leicester City have done it. The Foxes are back in the promised land of the Premier League after a 10-year absence. They beat Sheffield Wednesday 2-1 at the KP on Friday night, 21 league games unbeaten. That put them on the brink of promotion, but as Jim said, Derby and QPR on Saturday both lost, and that sealed Leicester's return to the top flight with 6 games to spare, which shows the sheer extent of their dominance this season in the Championship. And let's not forget all this after a year ago exiting in the playoffs in heartbreaking fashion. The board stuck with Nigel Pearson and they've been rewarded. Joining myself and Jim on the line patiently waiting is another big Leicester fan who was in the somewhat unique position of being there at Dean Court to see the Bournemouth QPR game on Saturday. It is Jason Bourne, who's a sports journalist, presenter and commentator at BBC Radio Leicester, well known to Leicester fans in that area. Jason, thank you very much for coming on the show. It has been a long decade for fans of Leicester City. Talk me through your emotions on Saturday then, when that final whistle went. Was it kind of a hairs on the back of the neck kind of moment?
It was actually a pretty surreal day because I had to drive 3.5 hours down to Dean Court for that game against Queen's Park Rangers and obviously Bournemouth on Saturday. And, you never thought whether it was going to be worth it or not. And obviously I was covering it for BBC Radio Leicester, do updates into the afternoon. And, I mean, my emotions at the full-time whistle were... I mean, I've got to remain professional at the time while I'm doing it. But, I mean, as a boyhood Leicester City fan as well, it was an incredible sight. I mean, I was probably the only one cheering as much as I was for Leicester City at the time. And, I mean, I rang my dad straight afterwards, after I'd just done my final match report, because he lives in Cyprus at the moment. And I spoke to him, and he was in tears. And then I started crying a little bit. And it was that good a feeling on Saturday. It's been 10 years of absolute pain for a lot of Leicester City fans, simply because of the relegation to League One. That was a terrible, terrible season. You know, the likes of Ian Holloway, Gary Megson, Martin Allen in charge that season. It was horrible. Administration a few years before that, doing poor in the Championship. But actually, the relegation to League One, the subsequent promotion, Nigel Pearson the first time round, and now the second time round, he's worked wonders. He's done a great job at the football club, and, you know, the City fans deserve promotion after the season, which they've had, because there's some great football at times.
Well, you've completely destroyed the division, haven't you? I mean, Jason's listed a load of the managers there, Jim. This is the full list. Mickey Adams, Craig Levein, Rob Kelly, Martin Allen, Gary Megson, Ian Holloway, Nigel Pearson first time around, Paulo Caesar, Sven, and then Nigel Pearson again. Talk us through the last decade as a Leicester fan for those sort of people who haven't been following the club as closely as you two.
It's a pretty depressing roll call, isn't it? You look down that list, some of the names on that list, Craig Levein for 2 years as well, best part of 14, 15 months, Rob Kelly for a little bit, yeah, Martin Allen, and all that, you know, it's such a high after the Martin O'Neill days, which was when I was kind of first getting into football and started following Leicester, and I was lucky enough to kind of see that team that he put together and winning the Worthington Cup as it was then against Tranmere in 2000, but... Yeah, what's followed has been a decade of ups and downs, mostly downs, but Nigel's done a fantastic job. I can't overstate, you know, how well he's done, particularly coming back second time round after seeing two managers go in after him. And, you know, he held no grudges when we brought him back from Hull, and he's done a fantastic job with the squad that he's got. He's trimmed the wage bill. He has consolidated what we've got, worked with it within quite tight budget restraints, and you know, he's going to get his just desserts as well as the guys next year when we're in the Premier League.
And Jason, how much credit goes to the board then for sticking with Pearson last season?
Well, that was the thing as well. I remember doing the commentary of the game up against Barnsley at Oakwell on Easter Monday last season, and City lost by 2-0, and it was the worst performance by far for a very long time, of that season especially. And it was in the middle of that really poor run of results, you know, from the end of February. City hadn't won for so many games after going top of the table, and they were looking like they were falling out of the playoffs, and would they even make the playoffs at the end of the season? And even then, I remember getting up the next morning and seeing all the speculation in the newspapers about Pearson's future. I asked him after the game, you know, you've talked about your future in the past, what about now? And he was quite philosophical about things. I don't think he would have been surprised even at that moment to have been sacked from the football club, but they stuck with him at that time. And obviously what happened against Forest and then Watford a couple of weeks later in the playoff semi-finals was heartbreak for the club. And even after that, there was speculation about whether he would lose his job and, you know, the pressure that he was under because he didn't get City promoted, you know, because the owners, and they've invested so much money, over £100 million into the football club. You know, when Sven was here, now when Nigel was here as well, they wanted to see promotion to the Premier League. They wanted to see a return, or at least something happen because of their investment. And I think a lot has got to go to the board and the owners at the football club, because they have been patient. All right, they may have sacked Sven-Göran Eriksson quite swiftly after that defeat against Millwall a couple of seasons ago. But since then, they've done wonders with improving the training ground, done things to ticket office, the club stadium itself, and all those things, you know, marry up together to create a cohesive atmosphere and a cohesive environment for Nigel Pearson and his players. And the board and the owners do have to take a lot of credit for it, because they've got what they wanted out of it. Might have taken a couple of years later than they expected, perhaps, but they've got it finally.
And Jim, Jason mentioned it before, but I mean, you've really done this in style as well. 27 wins out of 40 games, 76 goals scored as we record. If you had to pick out, I know it's really difficult because, I mean, you look at that squad, they've all been superb, but if you had to pick out, say, three players this season who've been integral, doesn't all have to be attacking players either, to the success of this season, who would you go for?
Kasper Schmeichel, because I think often a goalkeeper's influence, particularly, people tend to focus on the back four, but Kasper, you know, he has dropped a couple of clangers during the season. There was one, I think, where he dropped into his own net.
Was it Doncaster, was it?
Yeah, that's right. You know, but those kind of mistakes can be forgiven when he's, you know, he's saved penalties. He's made world-class, you know, match-winning saves that have won us far and beyond the amount of points that he's conceded.
Nearly scored a goal himself as well.
Yeah, nearly scored a goal himself, of course, against Yeovil a couple of weeks ago. My second one would probably be Danny Drinkwater. Obviously, he's got a lot of plaudits through the Football League Awards this year, and kind of he has been given a lot of credit for what he does. We spoke a couple of weeks ago when I was in the studio about the kind of him doing the unsung work that a lot of the time, winning the ball back, and he has scored a few goals as well. But a lot of his day to day job is winning the ball back in midfield. He and Matty James working together as a unit to break up opposition attacks and feed the likes of Anthony Knockhart, Lloyd Dyer, Riyad Mahrez, whoever's kind of out on the wings and putting three balls through. And Jamie Vardy, you know what I am, a big fan of him. And I think just the improvement in Vardy's form from one season to the next, I'm sure Jason will agree on this, that he looks a completely different player from one season to the next. We were, you know, all looking at him last year when he came in from Fleetwood with that big price tag relatively, from, you know, the level that he came from, around his neck, and saying, you know, is this lad going to be able to cut it here? He would have had his doubts last year, but I don't think he's got any of those left in Leicester now. Certainly those that have watched him week in, week out this year, he's been a revelation.
I'd agree with all of those points about the key players for City this season, Schmeichel. Danny Drinkwater especially, I think he's been pivotal in what Leicester City have done this season. I remember at the start of the campaign, we went to Middlesbrough to cover the game on the first day of the season. And I mean, some City fans were sceptical about whether he should be in the team or not. And I remember him scoring a goal, he clipped his ears to the crowd, and to be fair, he's not really looked back since then. He's become a real fan's favourite. And just on Jamie Vardy, and I think what you've just said there is spot on once again, because the improvement he's made as a player over the last 12 months or so has been fantastic. Yes, he came with that relatively large price tag from Conference side Fleetwood Town, but he had a difficult first season, and he spoke to the BBC a few weeks ago saying he almost quit football last season because of the pressure and the criticism he got from maybe some sections of the fans about how he was performing at the time. And again, you may have been surprised to see him start the season alongside David Nugent, but he's been a fantastic player. The aggression he's got, the pace he uses to draw defenders out, and how many penalties has he won this season? Again, opposition fans may say he's a diver, but no, he's not. He's able to draw defenders out, and he's won seven or eight penalties this season, almost half of what Leicester City have got, because they've got about 14 or 15, and all of them have rightly been given. And he's been a star performer because he's added goals to his game. And yes, he's not in the side at the moment because of that injury he's had with that groin problem, but, you know, I'm sure he'll be back sooner rather than later.
Thinking about it, I think David Nugent and Steven Gerrard have probably taken more penalties between them this season than the rest of the players in the Football League, haven't they? It's been crazy. Jim, so from here on in, six games to go. The game on Tuesday night against Brighton might have been played by the time people hear this, but I suppose the goal now is to go on and win the title in style.
Yeah, absolutely. We went up to Burnley a couple of weeks ago and we really put a marker down. Obviously, that game was billed as a title decider, and with it, you know, still being eight games away from the end of the season, it wasn't necessarily the case in the truest sense of the word, but with both teams being so far ahead of the likes of QPR and Derby, that's how it was billed by the media, and we put our marker down. You know, we went there and we beat them 2-0 in a quite a comprehensive victory as well. I don't think anyone who watched that game will have disagreed with the result and said that we didn't deserve it. So the key now, go on to, you know, the likes of Brighton, Huddersfield, Reading away in a couple of weeks' time and carry on that good form. Pearson isn't the type of manager to let the players rest on their laurels. I think Jason will tell you that from the times that he's spoken to Pearson in person this season. You're not going to be able to go out and spend the rest of the season kind of mentally on the beach. Pearson is going to want that title just as much as any fan in the crowd. And so the players. I think he's got a group of players with relatively little, you know, few egos. I think that was one of the key things that he did over the last couple of years, as well as the wage bill. A lot of the big egos went out of the club. These players play for each other. They're playing for the fans and, you know, they're playing for that league title because it's going to look fantastic in the trophy cabinet in a few weeks' time.
And Jason, I know you were down at the stadium today. I think Pearson was sort of straight onto that already, wasn't he? Sort of talking about, you know, back to work and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, he said they've got to celebrate what's been happening at the moment. And of course, they have done. And Jim Brightley mentions the togetherness in the squad. There's been videos floating around of a few Leicester City players celebrating the victory. Well, I say the victory. It felt like a victory. The promotion on Saturday afternoon around 5 o'clock. So Martin Vasilevsky, Andy King, Liam Moore.
A few selfies going around, wasn't there?
Yeah, a few of those going around as well. But he said, you know, they want to get the title now. They've always talked about wanting to win the title as well. And the 9 points clear at the top of the table before the game against Brighton on Tuesday. And you know, they've got to do it. I mean, they're favourites to do it already. I also just want to say as well, because of the consistent performances this season, it's because of a consistent team. And the club have said and like to put on record as well how good their sports science is at the moment. It's something that Nigel Pearson truly believes in, about injury prevention and stopping players getting hurt before going out on the field and making them as fit as possible, even if they're not necessarily in the side, because they've got to come in maybe after half an hour or an hour of a game and be ready to go. And we've seen the likes of Nottingham Forest and City played Barnsley a few weeks ago, defenders going off injured in the first half, and Forest players may be coming back before they should. And that has been key this season, injury prevention. There's only been one or two major injuries this season. Sean St. Ledger, Zimana Bakayoko, who may not really featured a great deal this season, but that has been key as well. And I think Nigel Pearson will use that as a template going forward as well in terms of next season and who he brings in and anything else he can add to that with the training ground. It's all bright for Leicester City at the moment.
Well, that is the sort of fun stuff out of the way. Now let's get down to business for next season. I'm going to read you a list here of the last three teams to go up from the Championship as title winners, which obviously we presume Leicester will. Cardiff, Reading and QPR. Now, I think pretty soon after all those clubs went up, Neil Warnock, Brian McDermott and Malky Mackay lost their jobs. And I think, Cardiff is soon to be relegated, we imagine. So none of those sides will be in the Premier League. So this is a big job for Nigel Pearson, isn't it, Jim, in the Premier League?
It's a huge job, yeah. And I think the pressure that you're going to get in the Premier League is unlike anything that he's going to have necessarily felt before. And I hope, personally, the board stick with him. I think they probably will. I think it's impossible to say, you know, we haven't got a crystal ball, and the pressure of the Premier League and the amount of money that comes in from the revenue streams and things like that ultimately can prove the downfall of a manager, to be honest. And, you know, those managers that you've just alluded to there, Mark, will not be the first, and they certainly won't be the last promoted managers to lose their jobs within maybe 6 months, which is a huge shame. But I've got every faith in Pearson. I think he's going to get the budget this summer to do what he wants with the squad, whether he wants to make a few additions, whether he wants to keep the core of that team together, get them tied down to contracts as well. I mean, we've spoken a few times on the podcast before, and when we had James Sharp on a few months back, you know, one of the key talking points was the likes of the big names that are out of contract in the summer, and Pearson himself is going to need a new deal as well. I've got every faith in him, and I hope the board stick with him, and hopefully we're able to make a good enough fist of the Premier League campaign in the first 4 or 5 months to kind of alleviate that pressure and make sure that there isn't that kind of guillotine hanging over the head feeling.
Well,
come Christmas time.
Jason, Leicester have gone out of the cup competitions to a couple of Premier League teams this season, so they have played a bit against Premier League opposition. Looking at that squad, which has performed, let's sort of not beat you around the bush, performed incredibly well this season, might go on to surpass 100 points. What are the areas of that squad that you think in the Premier League perhaps are going to need a bit of strengthening?
I mean, it's interesting. You mentioned those Premier League sides they played this season in the cup competitions. Of course, they played Fulham in the League Cup as well, beat them 4-3, and well worth their victory on that particular occasion. Went close against Stoke in the FA Cup. Again, it wasn't a full Leicester City side, but a big one against Manchester City. Most sides are clearly not going to beat them. But again, they gave a good fist of it on that night, and I think possibly the only side on the way to the final to even score a goal against Manchester City. Yeah. I think Lloyd Dyer, wasn't it, in the second half. But, I mean, in terms of strengthening the side for next season, I think they've got a good core of players already. We've mentioned Danny Drinkwater. We've mentioned Kasper Schmeichel. And maybe Jamie Vardy. Is he going to be able to make the step up? They've got that good spine of a team already. You look at Wes Morgan, who's been a pivotal player at the heart of central defence over the last couple of seasons. Is he going to keep Marcin Wasilewski, Liam Moore within that setup as well? I look at perhaps full-back, left-back as a potential position, which does need addressing. You've got Paul Konchesky there, but he's not played a great deal. And it was a big statement from Nigel Pearson after playing Paul Konchesky against Wigan. He rested a few players for that game and then brought Jeffrey Schlupp back for the game against Sheffield Wednesday on Friday, which I thought was not bold, but it just shows that maybe he's erring with or siding with Jeffrey Schlupp in terms of that left-back position. Is Konchesky going to be good enough? But is Schlupp going to be good enough against proper Premier League players? You also look at the central midfield, Drinkwater, James, you would expect or hope they can make the step up. But you've also got Andy King there, who's a very good Championship player, who you would hope to be able to step up as well. And out the two wide men, Riyad Mahrez and Anthony Kanoka, again, it's about stepping up. But you need... Or do you? I don't know. Do you need a 20-goal striker? I mean, that's the big question in the Premier League at the moment. And
it's weird, isn't it? Because like someone like Nugent in the Championship will get you 20 goals and you think, what a great, great striker. But from the times we've seen him in the Premier League, he obviously he's been playing in sort of bottom half sides, of course, but he's got sort of tended to get about 8-10 goals a season maybe, so.
Yeah, I mean, he went to Portsmouth and they didn't really fancy him straight away, did they? I think they loaned him out to the likes of Burnley and places like that, although he's got an FA Cup winners medal. But you look at the squad there that they've got up front, they've got Vardy. Can he make that step up so soon after playing non-league football just a couple of years ago? And Nugent, as you mentioned, Chris Wood, who Nigel Pearson keeps reminding us is still a very young player. It's in good form at the moment, scored for both club and country. That cracker against Burnley a couple of weeks ago as well.
Oh, what a goal.
You look at, well, it was. And you look at Kevin Phillips, you don't expect him to make the step up once again. Gary Taylor Fletcher, although would be a good player to have around, again, not a player that is prolific. So you would expect maybe a striker to come in. But as we've heard from Nigel Pearson over the weekend, he's not going to sign, or he says he's not going to sign marquee players. And we've been talking about it on our radio station over the last couple of days about how many players need to come in. Is it five? Is it six? Is it seven? But well, the big question is, will that affect, bringing all those players in, affect the nucleus of the squad, the togetherness of the squad that Nigel Pearson has worked so hard to build and out of the ashes of the Sven Göran Eriksson regime? So it's going to be an interesting summer down at the King Power Stadium, and one we're going to clearly watch closely.
Yeah, well, that's obviously something he's got to sort of bear in mind, not disrupting it too much. One player I did want to flag up that you mentioned there, Jason, is Knockhart. Jim, just talk to us a bit about him. We've got to have a word on him because, of course, he was the villain missing the penalty at Watford last season. He scored an absolutely brilliant free kick on Friday. How much has he sort of proved his worth this year?
Yeah, I think I don't think there was too much ill feeling towards him, I think, which is one of the main things. We look at it, it's kind of juxtaposed perfectly, I think, with the Jan Kermagant situation from a couple of years ago when he tried to chip that penalty in the shootout at Cardiff away in the second leg where, you know, we went there, forced a penalty shootout and he's chipped it. And the fan reaction then was completely different to the Knockhart one. Well, certainly the fan reaction that I kind of gauged was, you know, it was one of sympathy for Knockhart rather than kind of anger and you know, frustration, which it was two or three years before. He's a brilliant player on his day. He is, I think, our luxury player, if you like. On his day, he can be brilliant and he can turn a game and he can win a game for you. And you need that kind of match-winning quality in the Premier League. You'll watch games every week on Sky and you'll hear about them, you know, on the BBC, that players that don't necessarily do things game in, game out, but they will turn a game with a free kick or a piece of skill that will set up a goal-scoring opportunity and win a game for their side. Therefore, they maintain their place in the side.
Jason, let's wrap this up. Last question to you. Obviously, we talked about the start. It's been a long 10 years for Leicester City. And it's weird in football because you only get sort of promotions that, you know, they don't come around too often, basically. So you obviously, as a commentator, this is the first time you'll have seen Leicester sort of play with this, you know, this style and get promoted. How important is it for the fans to enjoy the next few weeks and then embrace the challenge next year?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is key for them to enjoy what's happening at the moment. I mean, there's the next three or four weeks before the end of the season, a few games. I mean, the plans are already in place for what happens on the final day of the season should Leicester City pick up the trophy, of course, after the game against Doncaster. And I think that's going to be a day that I think all Leicester City fans are going to remember. But, I mean, this football is a sport that's meant to be enjoyed. Yes, we can cry about it sometimes, can get angry about it, but it's a sport that is meant to be enjoyed. And the journey to get to the Premier League, City have got there now. And I think the excitement of the summer is going to be immense as well, seeing what happens in terms of transfers. Again, I don't think it's going to be like the old Sven days where there's maybe a new signing every 20 minutes or so, but it's going to be interesting to see what kind of player Nigel Pearson brings in. Because I think fans are going to know they're going to be added quality, they're going to be right for the team, right type of personality, and going to fit in with that team ethic that they've got at the moment. So, I mean, Nigel's already said that he's not going to tinker with it too much. He's just going to add what he thinks is right for the club. And who knows, it could be a great day out on the first day of the new season against Hull City.
Well, let's leave it there. Thanks very much for coming on, Jason, and Jim as well. Enjoy the next few weeks, both of you. I'm sure you will. Much appreciated. That's Jason Bourne, sports reporter at BBC Radio Leicester, and our very own Jim Knight. Next, we are going to drop down a division and take a look at another side who are on an incredible unbeaten run and also dreaming of promotion. It's 16 games and counting for the Millers and Steve Evans. So, Rotherham United promoted last season from League Two are at it again. The Millers, with 77 goals from 40 games, are, at the time of recording, the Football League's top goal scorers. And they scored at the start and at the death on Saturday as they won that crazy game at the Priestfield, 4-3 against Gillingham. That was in main thanks to a magnificent second half hat trick by Tom Hitchcock. It extended their brilliant unbeaten run that I just mentioned, plus also confirms them a place in the playoffs and ensures that they're still in with a chance of automatic promotion, just 6 points behind Brentford with six games to go. So can they do it? And what has been the secret to another incredible season at the New York Stadium? Well, joining me on the line right now is Jonathan Buchan, who's a freelance sports broadcaster and a man who watches the Millers week in, week out for BBC Radio Sheffield. Jonathan, thank you very much for coming on the show. First things first, tell me about this game on Saturday then. Was that the kind of comeback and result that makes you think that Rotherham might be on the brink of something special here?
Well, I think it was the most remarkable game that I've been at and actually watched in the flesh. And I've seen a lot of games over the years. And it was, from the very first minute to the very last minute, one of those crazy matches. 14 seconds in, the first goal came. And again, I think that's the quickest goal I've ever seen. I was sat with a man called John Brecken, who is an absolute legend for Rotherham, played over 450 games for them. He's been assistant manager for the football club as well. And even he said, all these years in football, you know, he's in his mid-60s now, that's the quickest goal he's ever seen, he thinks. So it was a remarkable game. And then you mentioned the substitution in the second half. Not only was it a second half hat-trick by Tom Hitchcock, who's on loan from Queen's Park Rangers, a 27-minute hat-trick from Tom Hitchcock. And, you know, there was some calamitous defending, which is what you get in League One at times, as you'll know. But there were also some wonderful finishes. One of the Gillingham goals was a brilliant lofted chip as well, which was absolutely magnificent. And then it was better down the other end. So it was one of those remarkable games. And, you know, if they can gee themselves up to keep fighting until the 96th minute for a league game at Gillingham, then what can they do when they're fighting for promotion, possibly in the playoffs or on the final day of the season for automatic?
Very true. And but considering he's only 21 as well, the quality of Hitchcock's goals, the first finish where he completely wrong-footed the goalkeeper, put it the other side, and like you say, the third goal in the last minute to produce that, unbelievable.
And just to have that cool-headedness and that calmness to be able to make the move, because the ball was, it was a hopeful overhead hack, you could say, by James Tavernier, and he just dropped in the area. He was the one who'd made the run from the onside position, because a couple of the players were offside at the time, running backwards towards, away from goal, should I say. So he'd made the right run. He got on the end of it, and then just looped it into the top far corner. And it was unbelievable scenes. It was in front of the travelling fans. And, you know, it's a four-hour journey from Rotherham down to Gillingham in a car. So on a coach from any of those fans, it was, you know, an hour or so longer easily. And there were a good few hundred fans that had made it right in front of them. Brilliant. And as you say, the first goal, I interviewed him after the game, and I says, you know, that third goal was magnificent for you. And he said, yeah, but my favourite was the first one, because he said the touch made it. If I hadn't have controlled it the way I did, I wouldn't have been able to finish it the way I did. So, you know, he knows just what quality he's got there. QPR certainly know what quality he's got. They've been frustrated and he's been frustrated. He's not been getting regular first team football. But with the way that Rotherham have been playing, you know, it's not been surprising he's had to sit out on the bench. However, he did also say to me after the game at the weekend, well, what else do I have to do to get a starting shirt now? And you would think that against Sheffield United, which is their next game, big game like that, that he really should be knocking on the door for a starting shirt now, but it's hard to change a winning team.
Yeah, well, you mentioned it's hard for him to get in the team, and I mentioned the fact they've scored so many goals. They must be, I mean, for a Rotherham fan, obviously, it's brilliant at the moment, but just as a sort of journalist to cover them, the quality of attacking play they're producing. I mean, looking at the strike line, Kieran Agard's got 21 this season, you've got Wes Thomas there, plenty of goals from midfield, Alex Ravel. There's goals wherever you look in that side.
Yeah, there are, and that's the thing, you know, they've got some very creative midfielders. You know, Ben Pringle, who plays on the left-hand side, he's only got himself six goals this season, but he's probably created a dozen at least, because his delivery into the box has been magnificent throughout the campaign. He's been linked with Championship clubs. You know, he's a former Derby player. He's been linked with them again in January, but obviously the Millers have been able to hold on to him. They've got Lee Frecklington in there, who is, you know, a real workhorse and has some great quality around the edge of the box to be able to ping one into the top corner every so often. They've managed to bring in on loan from Middlesbrough, Richard Smallwood, who does the unsung things and the parts of the game that necessarily fans don't notice. You know, he played a couple of lovely balls to set up Hitchcock at the weekend. And then, you know, Kieran Agard, as you say, he's got 21 goals. He's playing up front alongside Alex Ravel at the minute. But for the first half of the season, he was actually playing on the right-hand side of midfield. But he managed to find himself in the right place at the right time for so many games where he just kept scoring these goals. And, you know, he's not the most gifted of footballers, I think it's fair to say, but he is always in the right place at the right time, and he is a real workhorse. And, you know, he's taken his time on the right-hand side of midfield. Admittedly, he wants to play up front, and now he is playing up there. He's continued to score as well. So it's a good combination they've got. They play some lovely, fluid football, but then they can also knock it long, because Alex Ravel is one of the best, I don't want to be unflattering and calling a battering ram, but, you know, he's got a great touch. Yeah, exactly. I just have. He's got a great touch. He can bring it down. He can bring other players into the game with his control. You know, he's a very talented, and again, unsung player, but he's a real, you know, a real asset to Rotherham United, especially when they do at times have to, when some sides sit behind the ball, go along, because some teams have come to Rotherham and been afraid of them and just sat behind the ball, and at times you need more than one plan.
Well, it's been weird in League One this season, because we've had this sort of situation where there's been five outstanding teams who are sort of racking up all the points, and obviously Orient, Brentford and Wolves have sort of been at the head of that, and then sort of Rotherham and Preston have been sort of together for most of the season. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but at this stage sort of last year, Rotherham sort of made a late burst through the playoffs to pinch that last automatic promotion. I think they finished second in the end, didn't they? But but this season, it feels like they're about to do something similar, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think that they'll believe that as well. You know, they've been playing it down. Steve Evans, you know, he's a manager who will play it down, in public anyway. In private, I know that they are looking at the top two, but, you know, they won't say that publicly at all, because, you know, that's the right thing to do, isn't it? You know, you keep expectations grounded, and then if you have to go through the playoffs, you've not been disappointed by missing out on the top two, because at the end of the day, you've just been talking about getting in the playoffs. But last season, yeah, they had a bit of a wobble with probably about a quarter of the season to go and dropped out of the automatic promotion places and dropped down the table, and then managed to turn it around and climb back up and race their way into the top three, as you say. So they managed to do that last year, and I think that, you know, the players will believe that they can do that again, the fans will believe they can do that again, the management certainly believe they can do it again. And, you know, you can also look at Brentford and the way that they missed out on automatic promotion last year, obviously in that dramatic finale to Doncaster, and then they obviously missed out on the playoffs as well in terms of going up via the playoffs. So you do wonder if some of their players and some of their staff might get a little bit jittery. I know they're under different management now, but it's still under the same coaching staff. And you wonder if they'll get jittery and if Rotherham can chase them down. You know, I really, with six games to go, would not be writing Rotherham off at all. And with the running that they've got, this next fortnight is huge.
Yeah, well, let's give those fixtures out. They've got Sheffield United away on Tuesday this week, so that might actually have been played by the time some people are listening to this. But then they've got Bradford in another sort of Yorkshire derby, I suppose, on Friday.
Yeah,
and then
they've got
Wolves away on Good Friday, obviously top of the league. Then Port Vale and MK Dons at home, and then Swindon away. So they are playing a lot of teams up at the top there, but that's not necessarily a bad thing.
it's a good thing for Rotherham. They tend to step up their game. You know, for me, the game against Gillingham at the weekend was the one that I thought was probably the most worrying one. I, looking at it, thinking, well, are they going to be up for this game? And in some ways, you could argue that they, you know, maybe weren't at their best because they did concede three goals. Okay, they won the match, but they conceded three goals. And looking at this next fortnight in particular, Sheffield United, as you say, you know, the result could be over and done with here, so I'm not going to predict a result because I may sound very stupid. But, you know, they've got a game at Wembley at the weekend of Sheffield United to think about. And yeah. Nigel Clough has said that, you know, they will certainly, you know, move a few players around. Steve Evans said to me after the game of the weekend, we're going to have no respect for what Sheffield United's got coming up. We're going into the trenches. It's a Yorkshire derby and we want the points. Then you look at Friday night, they've got Bradford City who aren't particularly playing for anything now. You know, you could argue, you know, on the beach already, as the saying goes. But they've also got Hoodoo over Bradford over the last couple of years. They've had some very good results against them. It was a fiery affair every time these two meet, so that'll be an interesting one on the Friday night. And then Wolves, and by that stage Wolves could be all but home and hosed pretty much again, which could be another factor that you take into account and go, well, hang on, will they, you know, still be having that fight that Rotherham will be having to try and get in the top two? So for me, they've got a really good running. Yes, it's a tough running, but I think that suits them, and I think they'll be really G'd up for it, and they're at the best when they're playing the best teams in the league.
And with the squad they've got and the manager they've got and the obviously the stadium they've got now, does it feel like a club to you that's ready to be a Championship side again?
I think it's certainly ready to have a go at being a Championship side again. I think they would have to improve the playing squad. I don't think there's any doubt over that, and they clearly would do that. And Tony Stewart, the chairman, has always backed his managers, and in particular Steve Evans. You know, whenever Steve Evans has gone and asked for something, he's been able to go out and get it. And you know, he's signed well. He's had a high turnover of players, and some have come in, not lasted very long, and then been shipped out on loan. And that's just the way he's done things. You know, the players are a very talented bunch. I think at sometimes they maybe lack that little bit of aggression and needle and that experienced head that they might need if they go up. And, you know, you look at players like Kieran Agar, would he be able to score that many goals again in the Championship? I'm not too sure, to be honest with you. So they maybe have to look at that front again as well. But in terms of the infrastructure and setup now, the stadium's fantastic. For any you know, of your listeners that haven't been, it is an excellent stadium. It's not one of these identikits you see just popped up off the side of a motorway somewhere that all look the same but just have the club colours. It's in the heart of the town. It was, you know, hoped it would regenerate the town, and they're still hoping it will do so in the long run. And it has got character to it. It's, you know, two-tiered in terms of it slopes down from the highest point down to the lowest point on one side to the other. It is a really nice ground. And, you know, I think the fans, after everything they've been through, let's not forget, you know, they had administrations, huge point deductions. They were playing out of the town of Rotherham in the city of Sheffield at the Don Valley Stadium for four seasons. They've really been through the ringer of Rotherham fans. So it will be absolutely fantastic for them if the club could get itself back into the Championship.
Great stuff. Well, enjoy the run-in, Jonathan. Thanks very much for coming on and speaking to us. Jonathan Buchan, who is a freelance sports broadcaster who covers Rotherham for BBC Radio Sheffield. And next, it's time for My Club as we hear from another fan in 125 seconds, all to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the Football League. And today, it's the turn of the Blues, Birmingham City.
This is We Are Going Up, My Club in 125 seconds.
Hello, my name is Chris Quinn and My Club of Birmingham City.
So, Chris, do you remember your first ever game, first ever visit to St Andrews?
Well, I've got a vague memory. It was in the brilliant Anglo-Italia Cup back in the day. I believe we were hosting Genoa.
Wow.
And if my memory serves me right, we got absolutely battered and lost 4-2. I think it was around that sort of scoreline.
Set the tone then.
Yeah.
Okay, your best moment. Let's start with the positives. Your favourite moment ever as a Birmingham fan. You've had obviously a cup win and a few promotions. What's the one moment that stands out for you?
Well, funnily enough, Bruges away in the Europa League actually beats the Carling Cup for me. Going out there for 3 days with about 9,000 Blues fans. Chris Wood tapping in at the near post in the 100th minute. Absolutely ridiculous. And then the scenes in the stands were unbelievable.
And your favourite Blues player in your time supporting him?
I've got a bit of a penchant for underrated centre midfielders. So
okay. I like
Brian Hughes would be my favourite, closely followed by Keith Fahey.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Birmingham strike me as a club who in the Premier League have probably signed their fair share of foreign nobodies who turned out to be crap. Who's the worst player or worst signing you can remember?
Well, I actually put this out to the Twitter masses so that I wouldn't forget anybody, and I had a ridiculous amount of responses. We had a goalkeeper called Richard Kingston who played one game, and as he went to make a save, it was a home game against Portsmouth. He smashed his head off the post and had to be substituted. So he definitely gets a shout, but I think also up there would be Senegalese right back Ferdinand Coley, Argentinian striker Luciano Figueroa, who was signed by David Sullivan behind the manager's back and played 27 minutes away at Blackpool in a cup game, something like that. And Carlos Costley, who was atrocious but was a fan's favourite, as he had one sort of shuffle trick that seems to fool every defender in the division for a while.
Quite a roll call.
But they soon cottoned on, yeah.
Great stuff. I like the effort that's gone into that. I like the fact you've prepped it. Anyone else who comes on, you need to prep it like Chris. Chris, your 2 minutes is up. Thanks, mate.
No problem.
Mike Larb in 125 seconds. We are going up. We've got the Football League covered.
Thanks to Chris. There will be another My Club next week, provided we can get hold of a fan. Remember, if your club has not been covered yet this season, we gave out a huge list of who is left last week. Please do contact us. The Twitter is Wagyu Podcast. That's W-A-G-U Podcast. Or you can email via the website wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Hopefully, we can then arrange to get you on before the end of the season. Right then, let's go to Newcastle. Hello, David Cameron Walker.
Hello.
Hello. What the bloody hell are you doing in Newcastle is the first question.
It's a very good question, isn't it? I'm staying in a hotel, in fact, opposite, right opposite St James's Park, with a lovely view of the magnificent arena that's St James's Park in Newcastle, so not in Exeter. I'm at the student radio conference telling students how to do sports radio.
Brilliant.
Which may or may not be a good idea.
So did they sort of send the invite to the wrong person then?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You're 28 years old, mate. Stop clinging on. That's what I'm saying. Right, let's get into the roundup. We've done Leicester already at length with Jim and Jason, so let's start with a race for that.
Well, congratulations.
Yes.
I should extend my congratulations to them. Well done.
That's very nice of you.
Not bitter at all.
Let's talk about the second promotion spot. Defeats for both Derby and QPR at the weekend. Derby lost 1-0 at Middlesbrough. Nathaniel Chalabar with a goal. QPR lost 2-1.
Oh, come back, Nathaniel.
QPR lost 2-1 at Bournemouth. Bournemouth now won 4 in a row and 7 of their last 9. More on them in a second. But that was a bit of a missed opportunity for both clubs because Burnley only drew your lot Watford.
Yeah, getting a late goal. Scott Arfield, a player we've mentioned a few times, haven't we, as a bit of an unsung hero, getting a late goal, which is an all too familiar story for Watford really this season. A late goals have really cost us throughout the whole season. A great goal from Troy Deeney. It looked like a little bit of a deflection.
Magnificent strike it was.
Still a really good
seven hit. In his player, last seven, is that right?
A player who's absolutely banging form. He's the first player to score 20 goals in two consecutive seasons for Watford since Cliff Holton. Way back in the 60s,
how?
I think. Exactly, yeah. And he could well be off in the summer, I think, actually. But, I mean, credit to Burnley. They've done exactly what we haven't done this season. They fought back from adversity time after time to turn draws into wins and losses into draws, and that's exactly why they're still sitting pretty in second.
Well, there's only six games to go and they've still got a 10-point cushion now, so only a meltdown of epic proportions would prevent them getting that spot. In terms of the playoffs, Derby and QPR are going to be in there. Charlie Austin, I noticed, came on as a sub for QPR on Saturday. That could be quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, they got him back. They have been struggling in his absence. They haven't really had any strikers or forward players that have been in form all season apart from him. But then Ravel Morrison, who's won a player of the month, hasn't he? He's come in recently and has scored a few goals, looked lively for them. He's got obvious quality. You know, it wasn't so long ago that people were talking about him as maybe even going to the World Cup with England. And, you know, now having Austin back with Morrison in the team, I suppose that will give them a boost before the playoffs. And they need it, really, don't they? Because they have had a few... kind of, well, they've just the last few months, really, they've stuttered. They've done enough to keep up in that top six, but they will be disappointed that they're not in the top two, and they're going to need to step it up a little bit to stave off the challenge from some of the teams coming up into the playoffs that could make it late on.
Definitely. In fifth, Wigan, who beat Leeds 1-0 on Saturday, Martin Waghorn.
Leeds on TV at lunchtime again?
Never. I know. And there was actually a good bit on the Football League show where Steve Claridge pointed out that Jack Butland put his hand up to appeal for a foul, I think it was. And in that split second, the shot came in and he just couldn't quite get down to it. Play to the whistle, Jack. Play to the whistle. Below them, though, that sixth spot, Reading had a very good weekend. They won 1-0 at Charlton with their first win at the Valley in almost 20 years. Danny Williams with a goal. 16 out of the last 18 away points
they
picked up.
Didn't he enjoy it as well?
He did, didn't
Running
he?
Running into the crowd, yeah.
He did. And there's a 5-point cushion now between Reading and the four clubs below, which would lead you to think, David, that they'd be nailed on. But listen to this. I don't know if you've seen this. This is the running that Reading have got their last six games. They play Bournemouth away on Tuesday night, who are on fire. And obviously Bournemouth are 5 points behind them. So if Bournemouth win that, that's down to two. Then they play Leicester at home next Monday. They then play Wigan away on Good Friday, Middlesbrough at home on the 22nd, Donny away, and then Burnley on the final day. So that's four of the top 10, including the top two.
Although, I mean, the games against Leicester and Burnley, Leicester obviously already up, Burnley probably will almost certainly be up by the final day. So you'd think they should go into those games thinking that they really should take advantage of that and win those. Middlesbrough, Doncaster, they should be winnable. It's the win in the Bournemouth game that really are the two huge crunch games for them, aren't they? And the Bournemouth game will be tomorrow night as we record, Tuesday night this week, is absolutely huge. Just, what, I mean, Bournemouth out of nowhere. They had a good season. You know, they were lower mid-table for a period, mid-table, doing decently at home, conceding a lot of goals early season away from home, including six at Vicarage Road back in August. And out of nowhere, they've put this fantastic run together. And they could be the club. They could be the club if they get the win on Tuesday.
Do you want to hear their running? Their running is Red.
Well, I've just been looking at it, isn't it? It's, they've got the Reading game, Yeovil, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswich and Forest. So all teams have got something to play for. All teams have got something to play for. So they're not, none of those games are going to be easy, but the games against Reading, obviously Ipswich and Forest, the opportunity to take points from teams around them. I mean, and they're absolutely flying. You wouldn't bet against them at the moment. They've got the momentum.
So we're also on 58 alongside Bournemouth, Brighton and Ipswich. Both of them didn't win at the weekend. Forest as well. Nottingham Forest. Never a dull moment. They lost 2-1 at home to Millwall, but they have finally appointed their new manager, although he's not taken over.
Well, he's not there yet.
Until the summer. And Gary Brazil sort of said in the interview after the game that, you know, we're not giving up on this season just yet. Well, it kind of looks like the board have.
Well, it kind of looks like Stuart Pearce has, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, surely if he wanted to come in, I know, you know, he has got
bit of an odd one, that
with radio and TV, he's doing stuff for Talksport during the World Cup.
Nice
so
plug.
I mention it because, you know, we've all been saying at work, oh, sure, surely that's Pierce off now, isn't it? But I think he seems to be quite an honourable guy. So I think there is a part of it that's saying, look, I've made a commitment to these broadcasters and I will follow that through. And I can't commit myself fully to Nottingham Forest yet. But you can't help but think, look, Stuart, just get rid of all of that and concentrate on the job. Because if he'd gone in and if he'd managed to galvanise that squad, they could have finished in that sixth place. And I really don't think they're going to do it under Gary Brazil now. And, you know, it's start again next season for Stuart Pearce. Maybe that'll be a good thing for him. I don't know. Maybe it would have been a bit too much of a baptism of fire to find themselves in the Premier League after, you know, taking over after a few weeks. But, you know, the fans were disappointed. My weekly Millwall update from Joe Amplett, he went to the game. He went to the game at Forest at the weekend and he said Forest were terrible, the atmosphere was bad, the fans were negative and Millwall just stifled them and they got the 3 points, which is absolutely huge for them. But, yeah, well, Forest have blown it really, haven't they?
Yeah, well, 10 games without a win. Now, more on Millwall in a second. Before we go into the relegation battle, Leeds United, DC, Massimo Cellino, the story that keeps on running this. Jesus. Leeds have suffered their 7th defeat in 8 games, losing 1-0 at Wigan. They missed a penalty at home to Charlton last week in injury time to get a point. That just about sums up their season, doesn't it? But this is what's happened. Cellino can now complete his takeover because he's won an appeal against the Football League's decision to block the move. Where he's agreed to buy a 75% stake in the club from Gulf Finance House Capital. Is this positive news or not? I can't really work it out, to be honest. I mean, the Leeds fans
tricky.
Seem happy with it, don't they?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Cellino's obviously got interviewed by the guy from the podcast last week and he was on Sky Sports News as well. I heard that live and that was a crazy interview. They were trying desperately to keep it onto football and kind of Leeds United matters, but he was going on and on about this boat, this tax exile issue with the boat and saying, I'm not guilty. Poor Brian Swanson was having a heart attack. But, you know, he's certainly a character and he seems to be passionate and committed to Leeds and, you know, very unhappy about what he deems to be bad practice in terms of the management structure of the club and he wants to go in and do a good job. Not sure whether he will or not. I don't know that much about how he's done at Cagliari. I know he's just sacked the manager, I think. At
yeah, he has. Diego Lopez, 36 manager in 22 years.
Exactly. I mean, that's the stat, isn't it? It's crazy. Brian McDermott, he's been sacked once before this season. Yeah. Still there. I imagine he'll probably go in the summer, to be honest. And yeah. Look, I mean, let's be honest. Brian's had a difficult job to do with all the turmoil behind the scenes. But at the same time, he's not done that well compared to how well he did at Reading. It hasn't gone for him at all this season. He hasn't kicked on. He looked a bit of a beaten man at times. I don't know how much that is to do with the takeover, but it hasn't been good. So you can make a case for him going. Certainly, they're bottom of the form table in the Championship. They're doing terribly. But I suppose the bad thing is it's more uncertainty. It's certainly a gamble with Cellino taking over at Leeds United. By no means is certain that he's going to come in and ignite that place. And that's what he needs. He needs someone who's got money, who's got commitment for the long term, who can come in to that club and get those that huge fan base and get the club moving in the right direction. And you just don't know, you know, you'll be on tenterhooks if you're a Leeds fan, because it's yet again, it could be another false dawn, or it could be a return to the promised land, but you just don't know which way that's going to go at the moment.
There was a great piece by Daniel Taylor actually in The Guardian on how not to run a football club, all about Leeds, which is worth having a read of if you're interested. Down the bottom of the table then, DC, things are very interesting all of a sudden. Birmingham won 3-1 at Doncaster, so they've pulled clear a bit. 2 goals from McCader, who was obviously at Doncaster on loan earlier this season. Blackpool lost at home to Yeovil, so they're not quite out of it just yet. But down the bottom, there's 3 points separating 4 clubs. Charlton, who obviously lost at the weekend, but they did win at Leeds last week. You've got Barnsley, who drew at the weekend, Millwall, who won at Forest, and Yeovil, who won at Blackpool. And just when you think one of these sides are out of it and they're going down, they managed to pull a result out of the fire.
Well, they're all fighting, aren't they? And as so often happens at the end of the season, teams that can't get a win for love nor money all season suddenly start winning. Millwall win away at Forest. Yeovil have put together a good run of results recently, but still found themselves bottom of the table on a Saturday. I backed Barnsley to win against Brighton, actually, but I suppose they might be a bit disappointed, Danny, you know, drawing a blank and getting a 0-0 draw at home to Brighton. And, you know, as you say, Blackpool possibly still not out of it as well. It looks like it will go down to the last game.
Well, listen,
Charlton still have those games in hand, don't they? Which is what all those teams around there will be focusing on.
Well, listen,
you're absolutely willing them not to do them.
Their next two home games, Charlton, are is Yeovil, which I think is midweek this week, and then they play Barnsley at home next week.
We're going to go, aren't we?
We are going to go, which is the game that we were going to go to a couple of months ago, but in sort of effect, it's worked out better for us because this could be a potential sort of
huge
relegation decider, really. The podcast will be out on Wednesday next week because we'll be going to the Charlton against Barnsley relegation game on Tuesday. A quick story on Yeovil, actually, before we leave the bottom of the Championship. Ishmael Miller has been let go back to Forest because he had an argument with Gary Johnson. He stormed out of a Yeovil meeting. Gary Johnson had been questioning him and a few of the other players about why they'd travelled home, i.e. home, instead of staying in Somerset after a game. And he basically had a strop and walked out, and they basically let him go. And he'd scored 10 goals for them. He was their goal scorer. It's quite a big gamble to let your goal scorer go at this stage.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Gary Johnson is a manager who has had certain clashes with players before. I've heard him tell stories about this sort of thing that has gone on. He's not afraid to get stuck into players and, you know, tell them who's boss. And he is the boss, and he's made the decision to let Ishmael Miller go. He could regret that, though. You know, maybe at this stage of the season, a little bit more pragmatism, trying to keep things going, just patching things up until the end of the season. Because, I mean, but then if a player's unmotivated after an argument with the manager, maybe he thinks he's not going to do it. But ultimately, as you said, he's scored goals for them. He's scored crucial goals for them. He's got them points this season. He's been a good signing for them. He's had the best spell that he's had over the last few years. We know he's a talented player. He's had injuries. He's not settled at clubs. He's had loan spells. But he seemed to, you know, have a reasonably good thing going at Yeovil this season. He's been a really important player for them. And to let your, you know, one of your main scorers go at this stage in the season when you're right down there, you might wonder whether they look back at the end of the season and wonder whether that was the wrong decision.
OK, let's go down into League One, the race for promotion there. Wolves beat Peterborough 2-0 on Saturday. Goals from Danny Bart and Dave Edwards. They've got a 12-point lead over third, a 6-point lead at the top. They need 7 points for promotion, and they've got 23 clean sheets in the league this season, which I think equals their club record from 1924. And we've talked about it before, but it is that defensive solidity that Kenny Jackett's been able to build that team around, isn't it?
I've been talking to a Wolves fan, actually, one of the students here, and I was saying, it's so easy to say in hindsight, but we all said at the start of the season, Kenny Jackett was as good as a sure thing as you could find for Wolves, and he's done it again. He's done well. Every club he's been at, he's performed arguably above expectations. And I know Wolves had big expectations this season, and he's met them. And he's probably more than met them, because they're at the top of the league. They're into the 90s now with their points total. They're going to get more than that. And I think they will win this division, and they'll go back into the Championship next season. And they'll be a club, you know, who still has a squad that's capable of more than competing at the Championship level. They've got the infrastructure there. They'll still have some of the money from the Premier League days still kicking about. And that'll be a big club next season. And it'll be big expectations. The expectations will be even higher next season. And you'll have to deal with that, because the fans, they're known for turning early doors if things don't go very well. But you wouldn't bet against Kenny Jackett being a man that could deal with that and take them, you know, well into the top half of the table next season.
Below them, Brentford beat Notts County 3-1 on Saturday. Draws for Preston and Orion. And obviously Preston have had a difficult week with the spot-fixing allegations involving some of their players. But what about the race for second then? Because we talked about Rotherham at length already with Jonathan.
Brentford will certainly be looking in their rear window, won't they?
Yeah, 6 points behind now. And they've got a better goal difference as well.
You didn't get it. You didn't get the joke. Really? The hat-trick from Hitchcock.
I don't get it.
Oh, for God's sake. Rear window is an Alfred Hitchcock film.
Is it?
Yes.
My movie knowledge is dreadful.
Brentford might be getting Vertigo.
Is that Hitchcock?
Ah, disgraceful.
I know there's a U2 song. I know that called Vertigo. That's all I've got. But seriously, though, Rotherham?
Well, absolutely fantastic. I mean, you know, I think we forget they snuck into the promotion, didn't they? Automatic promotion, really, right at the end of last season. And then here they are, knocking on the door for automatic promotion again. Ever since Steve Evans had that long stadium ban.
Yeah.
He's not really been in the headlines as much as he has been previously. So maybe he'd learned a good lesson out of that. They've knuckled down. Hitchcock has been a player that's come to them and scored goals on loan from QPR. And, you know, at the new stadium, they are a club that's going places. They've got a good infrastructure. They're moving forward off the pitch. And this season's been a dream for them.
OK, let's talk about the situation down the bottom. Obviously, Posh lost at the weekend, but perhaps we'll come back to that race for the final player spot next week. Down the bottom then, all changed. Some huge results at the weekend.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
We talked about Gary Medine last week, and he delivered, scored for Carlisle as they beat Swindon 1-0. That's three clean sheets in a row there. First win in eight games. Tranmere, who we talked about last week.
God, I bet on Colchester.
You know, I slagged off John Louis Prakpro. Went and scored one and made one. Unbelievable. There was obviously the Tranmere were playing in Colchester's kit there, weren't they? Because it was a bit of a shambles. Crawley.
That's one for football cliches, isn't it? The team that has to play in the, you know, the home team's away kit.
Yes. Due to bad planning, basically. I mentioned Crawley there. They obviously have had all these games in hand. They've lost five in a row since they beat Wolves, so they're slipping down there. Shrewsbury beat Stevenage. Crewe won.
Three or four teams are all on 43 points down there.
Yeah. So I've got the table in front of me. So you've got, obviously, this is the time of recording Monday night. You've got Stevenage on 39, Notts County on 40, Shrewsbury on 41, then Crewe, Carlisle, Tranmere, Colchester all on 43, and Crawley on 46.
Interesting. Like we said last week, it looked like a few teams were dead and buried, but it's come right back into it. Teams are... It's a mental thing, isn't it? I think it's a psychological thing. Sometimes when you're right down at the bottom and you think you're completely dead and buried, some sort of survival instinct kicks in and you manage to get these results. You get one result. Maybe you get a draw that you shouldn't have got or a win that you shouldn't have got in the last minute. And all of a sudden you believe and the players mentally are able to perform to a level that previously they looked nowhere near all season. And that's why we always have these relegation battles towards the end of the season. And, you know, it's good for us as fans, but, you know, as neutrals rather, but fans of the clubs must be sitting there thinking, God, like, why couldn't you pull these results out earlier in the season?
Well, we haven't got a bloody clue who's going down, so don't sort of ask us to predict. We'll follow that over the next few weeks. And incidentally, we asked the question last week, didn't we, about why four teams go down from League One and four go up from League Two. No, not really. The best we've had is Adam Priestley, who says, my guess is it goes back to Division Three being split north and south, ? So perhaps we should do some actual proper research into that this week. Okay, right, League Two then. Rochdale drew 0-0 with York. They stay top. Scunthorpe, the Invincibles, they won 1-0 at Torquay. Sam Winner with a penalty, 25 unbeaten. They're playing Bury on Saturday. It's nailed on. We're going to break that record. Chesterfield in third. They drop points at home to Newport. So the top three still a bit in front. Chesterfield only 3 points ahead now because Fleetwood won at Oxford.
Fleetwood, they won, didn't they?
Yeah, and we talked about Oxford last week. But do you remember when we had Dave Pritchard on the whole the time of the Chris Wilder incident? We sort of said they're obviously...
I mean, they've screwed this up, haven't they, big time?
Yeah.
Because they were well on for automatic promotion. They were right in the hat. And I was just reading an interview with Gary Waddock, and it's stuffed full of... I mean, the top line is that the Oxford players are completely, like, they're distraught mentally. They're done, they're spent, they've got nothing left in the tank. And then he goes on, he's clutching his straws, saying, you know, we've got to dig deep. We've got to look at ourselves. We've got to find something, you know, a performance that we need to. We've got to turn the corner. And all these things, you're thinking, you know, maybe it's too late for them. Maybe they waited too long to make that managerial appointment. It was Mickey Lewis, wasn't it, who was in charge for quite a few games there. And they stumbled. They trod water for too many weeks. They were in a great position. They lost Wilder. You know, whether that was a good or a bad thing, you can debate about that. Wilder may be looking at it now and thinking, I made the right decision. but Oxford will be gutted because they're a team, they've been knocking on the door, but then right at the last minute they fade away and they've done it again.
Well, in terms of sort of impacts as a manager, three games he's been in charge, they've lost all three and they've not scored a goal. So
good.
Could have gone better. Down the bottom then, let's talk about the, obviously, Southend won against there in the playoffs.
Can we talk about Bury before we go?
Yeah. Of course we can.
I can't believe, it's
11th,
absolutely
mate.
Absurd.
11th.
You're not far off the bloody playoffs.
I know, it's on.
I remember, about 10 days ago, on that weekend where we went up to Nottingham, before we met you, I was on the train, we were with some lads who are not Football League supporters, and they were asking us about our podcast and the teams and stuff, and how Bury doing? And me and Carl were sitting there going, they could really go down. And we were like 2 points above the relegation zone or something. You had 44 points, 46 points or something. And we were saying, they really could, they're really in danger. Despite how badly Torquay and Northampton are, if they lose this weekend, they could have a shocker. You beat Northampton that weekend, then you won the game in the week, and then you won again at the weekend.
We did.
9 points in 7 days, and you're not far from the bloody playoffs. It's absolutely absurd.
I know. That's the kind of division it is this season. Down the bottom, which thankfully I don't need to worry about anymore, Wickham beat Dagenham 2-0. That was a big win for them because Northampton also won as well. Chris Hackett with a great finish, actually, with a tight angle away at Accrington. So there's a 3-point gap between Northampton and Wickham, who've still got to play each other, remember? So that is going to be a huge, huge game. Torquay, though, their sort of return to the Football League looks like it's coming to a miserable end. They're a long, long way from safety. Before we go, DC, a few more things I want to talk about.
Okay.
Firstly, the FA Cup semi-finals, which are coming up this weekend. We could have an all Football League Cup final. Wigan play Arsenal.
I had the privilege of holding the FA Cup this morning.
Did you?
Yes, they brought it in for work.
Okay.
And for the 4-hour breakfast show at TalkSport, completely ridiculous. I don't understand why people consistently want to bring trophies, inanimate objects, into radio studios.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
You can't see
them on the radio, and the cup can't talk.
Was there magic
anyway,
in the air?
There wasn't any magic in the air at all. And this guy, big, massive guy with a ridiculous ponytail.
Wasn't the moose, was it?
He had gloves on, came in, had these white gloves on, just plonked the thing down in the studio and literally for 4 hours stood with his hands behind his back next to the trophy, not saying a word. For 4 hours. That's his job.
Did he have rubber gloves
standing
on?
Standing next to the FA Cup. It was ridiculous.
Anyway, the games. Wigan against Arsenal and Hull against Sheffield United.
Well, Wigan are going to do it.
Wigan are going to do it. After how bad Arsenal were on Sunday, they've got a chance, haven't they?
Absolutely. Even more so than when we spoke about it. The pressure on Arsenal is huge. It's massive. People are saying that this game, and if they win subsequent final, could be absolutely pivotal to whether Arsene Wenger is at that club, whether his long reign comes to an end. The next biggest thing to when Fergie retired in the summer. It's that big for Arsenal. If they've got a weight of almost, 15 years worth of history on their shoulders in that game. The fans are desperate for a trophy. And Wigan have been playing well, and they've got absolutely no pressure on them whatsoever. So,
Come on, Wigan.
They're going to do it. They're going to go back to Wimbledon. They're going to do it again.
What about Sheffield United against Hull?
I mean, not quite a clear cut this one.
No.
Well, not the other one is clear cut. But I mean, not quite the same sort of balance. But, Hull have been doing well. I think they might have just enough to get them on. I've been quite impressed by them this season. If you think how close they were, I often think about it on a daily basis. not going up automatically last season, they've been arguably the best team of the three that have gone up this season. And Sheffield United, they're doing well enough in League One. Clough's got them on a decent run. And it should be a tight one, but you couldn't call it. If I was going to call it, I probably would tip it just in favour of Hull, but I think it'd be a good game nonetheless.
Okay, and remember, anyone going to a game this weekend, all games in England kick off 7 minutes late because of the 25th anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster. Right, before we end the show then, last week at the New Den, Prostate Cancer UK versus the MPs. So unfortunately we haven't got any audio from the event, but it was a great morning out there. So if you missed the show last week, got invited along, I sort of hung around next to Laurie McMenemy on the touchline, bizarre, and DC played in the same team as Lufa Blissett.
I did. It was ridiculous.
And you were 4-0 up and you lost 6-5.
We lost 6-5. I mean, it's absolutely scandalous.
You were not happy with Dermot Gallagher, were you?
Dermot Gallagher, he needs to take a long hard look at himself. Never mind getting Dermot Gallagher on the phone to talk about referee decisions. Someone we could do the same about him. It was terrible. He gave a disgraceful penalty against us when we were 4-1 up. There was never a penalty in a million years. He gave them a goal, which he said was over the line when he couldn't see. He was 40 yards away, couldn't get up with play. And it was ridiculous. He gave them indirect free kick, which I subsequently cleared off the line. And, that was nearly an absolute scandal. But we just collapsed. So, we did start off with Neil Harris and Luther Blissett up front. And then after we were winning 4-0, we gave Neil Harris to the MPs, and that somewhat turned the game. But I didn't start the match.
You didn't?
I told our gaffer, who's one of the Millwall coaches, that I was a centre-back, could do a job at right-back or left-back if you need me, a centre-back by trade. And he was like, OK, son, yeah, we'll bring you on after 10 minutes when one of the old guys is blowing. 10 minutes comes, he went, son, can't, you're on right wing. What? Right wing? I know you've seen me run. I've never played right wing in my life.
But you did all right. You nearly
I really enjoyed it. The best thing about it was a football fan's, Watford fan's dream come true. Luther Blissett was playing on the right side of the front two. I was playing right wing, so I was dovetailing with Luther Blissett, trying to do my best Nigel Callahan impression. Probably wasn't quite that good. But there was a couple of moments where I was making runs through. Luther had the ball, sort of holding the ball up, and I was running through, going, Luther, put it over the top.
Hit me.
It was like that. You just stand still and you think, Christ, I'm telling Luther Blissett to try and pass me the ball.
Brilliant.
And so it was amazing.
And Holloway did a little thing, did he, on the pitch before, and a nice little
pep
talk.
Yeah, he did another nice little speech about prostate cancer, reminded us all why it's such an important cause. And, you know, I just reiterate what I said last week, really. Get yourself on the website.
Yes.
Men United, get yourself signed up, learn about it, get yourself checked out.
It was good to see some of the Football League teams wearing the scarves as well when they were going out for games at the weekend.
I've got so many of those bloody scarves now. I've got four of those Men United scarves in my house.
Wearing with pride. To get in touch on Twitter this week, it is at Wagyu Podcast. The SoundCloud page is soundcloud.com/Wagyu Podcast. And you can go to the website, weargoingup.co.uk. Remember, reminder, if you still want the free audiobook courtesy of Audible, that offer is at audible.co.uk/goingup. To go get involved.
Summer holidays coming up. Summer holidays coming up. You're going to need a book for the beach, aren't you?
Absolutely. Right, enjoy Newcastle, mate. And
I will, mate. I've got to go. I'm absolutely freezing my nuts off the Newcastle University campus.
I'll let you go, mate.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.
That's Dave Walker. We'll be back next week on Wednesday because it's Charlton against Barnsley Tuesday night. Bit of live We Are Going Up action for you. So I'll speak to you on Wednesday next week.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.